Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
There seems to be one issue on which conservatives and liberals actually agree. And we'll address that later today here on The Voice of Reason.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on The Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here is your host for today's program, Ed Golly.
And we will get to that topic after the break here on The Voice of Reason. What is it that conservatives and progressives agree on? But right now, it seems like we have a little trouble agreeing on what actual human life is and when life begins, and they're doing it in Alabama with improbable fanfare. Joining me today by telephone, Michelle. Michelle, I know that's a topic that you're right on top of.
Well, they made a big mess, and now they got to fix it, and they did last night in Alabama. They passed a bill very quickly, and that was to correct the IVF mistake they had made. Remember when they declared embryos children, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they found out that opened a big old can of worms, and all the women who were involved in IVF treatment had to cancel them because everybody was afraid of getting thrown in jail for killing an embryo who is a child. By the way, did that mean you could get a tax benefit and claim that embryo as a child?
You could make a good case for the IRS for that, couldn't you? But the thing targeting this IVF is really politically toxic too, isn't it? Because, and I think Republicans know it, because 1 in 6 Americans has struggled with fertility issues, and the polls show that IVF has overwhelming support among voters, including 83% of evangelicals and 78% of those who call themselves pro-life, which explains why Trump quickly proclaimed his support for IVF and why the lawmakers in Alabama were running around with their hair on fire and introduced those bills almost immediately, reversing what their chief judge ruled.
You know what, though? And that is not going to solve the problem, because what's to stop other states from jumping in and doing the same thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, they just kind of opened, it's a whole cluster for them, and it completely shows that they haven't, the dog catching the car when they jettisoned Roe versus Wade a year and a half ago. All these cans of worms. And if people don't think that states like Alabama, super, super red, aren't going to try stuff like this, banning abortion 100%, what they've done in Texas with bounties. If you assist someone driving them across the border of Texas to go get an abortion, you can, $10,000 is what the state will give you to rat on your neighbor, this is why. Go ahead.
Well, it really is something that the Republicans completely own, and I think the voters are going to remember in November that none of this would have happened without Trump's ultra-conservative Federalist Society appointments to the Supreme Court, all directed by Leonard Leo and his mobsters who want to turn our country into a Christian theocracy, and these are the first steps that they're taking to do it. And I think it's just a start, because this guy's ruling read like a sermon instead of a court ruling. And it says that, Republicans are at war with our fundamental separation of state and church. They really want this country to be a Christian theocracy. And now we're seeing how oppressive Christianity and its ideologies are. And the voters, I hope, will remember this in November and decide, no, we don't want to live that way. We're perfectly happy with the way the Founding Fathers set this country up to be free of religious oppression, because that's what essentially they had sought to get away from when they came over here in the first place.
Exactly. You just came up with a great slogan for these people who want to talk about abortion as an issue. Remember in November.
Yeah,
and don't forget it, because it might get buried under other topics. By the way, you mentioned it was also these conservative judges. We cannot forget who made that was possible, and that would be your favorite, my favorite.
Mitch
McConnell.
Yep.
Oh. I guess, are you going to be throwing a goodbye party for him, Ed?
I have the champagne chilling, even though he's still going to be the rest of his
term. And I just watched a compilation of quotes that he said about Trump right after the insurrection, and how he's not fit, and he's totally responsible, and they were terrorists who invaded the Capitol. Because Mitch was one of those people that had to be, you know, shuttled away. And boy, how quickly he forgot that fealty and party came first yesterday. The guy he hasn't even talked to in 3 years, the guy who Trump insults and who has made so many racist comments against his wife. What does he call her? Choo-choo China or something? He had all these names for his wife. Yeah. And yesterday, despite all of that, despite detesting Trump and what he has done to the party, he gave his endorsement.
Yep. Yeah. Putting party like over country, like they all do.
They're all going to be walking like Croatian men, like with no spines, you know, bent over. It's unbelievable. Well, you had mentioned about what's happening with IVF in this country. What about France? What's going on there?
Well, they saw what was happening over here and decided that they aren't going to take any chances, and became the first country to enshrine a woman's right to an abortion in its constitution. And lawmakers from their upper and lower houses of parliament met Monday and easily passed this historic amendment, approved 780-72. And when it was done, nearly the entire joint session stood in a long-standing ovation. And it was driven. Yeah, it was literally driven by concern that snowballed in France after the U.S. started rolling back these abortion rights 2 years ago with the Dobbs decision. French President Emmanuel Macron promised that France would ensure women's right to abortion, and that would be protected in the event of any similar moves to restrict access at any time in the future. So they're protecting themselves from prospective future conservative politicians.
And, you know, they call it a woman's constitutional freedom to have an abortion. But we might add, before the far right says, oh, you're going to be yanking out fetuses or babies at 9 months. No, I think right now, is it 16 weeks over there? It might be 4 months is the typical time that up to you can have an abortion up to 4 months like that. So, you know, this go-to argument that the Republicans have, and Trump has blasted himself about guess what Hillary Clinton wanted, to rip babies out of the womb at 9 months. Nobody does that. I don't even know a doctor who would do that. I don't know any mother who would do that.
Of course
not.
But
that is the fear-mongering.
Well, the operative word there is viability, and that's what's enshrined in the amendment proposal that we have here in Florida. And we all understand what viability is. Our attorney general is trying to pretend that it's such a vague term that we, the voters, can't understand what it is. But we know what it means, and they do, too. Incidentally, the amendment's they aren't wasting any time over there. It's going to be inscribed in the Constitution tomorrow, March 8th, which is International Women's Day.
Unbelievable.
They're going to have a big ceremony.
Can you imagine them working this fast and doing anything of consequence in our Congress right now? Nothing.
Yeah,
I can't imagine.
That's a good point. But
the thing with the France, just so that people know, abortion has been legal there since, 1975 or something. It's not like they're having an argument there, but just the fact that our actions in America made them preempt a future conservative who would try to come in and do what happened to our country, I thought that was an amazing story. Amazing.
It is. And, you know, the effort is not over with what happened in Alabama by any means. You're familiar with the Heritage Foundation, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, my favorite place.
Yeah, well, Sarah Jones writes in New York Magazine that at this very moment, conservative think tanks like them are building a roadmap for integrating Christian nationalist principles into a second Trump administration that would reshape every aspect of American life and law. She says they've called for ending what it deems recreational sex, ending that, and senseless use of birth control pills, while Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has said the court should revisit rulings guaranteeing the right to contraception and same-sex marriage. What lies ahead is total war, and not just on women. I mean, this is so.
I wonder if Lauren Boebert's gonna. She's the one that got pregnant as a teenager, and then her son got pregnant as a teenager. I guess that was recreational sex, right? But you know, people like her are gonna stand up and support that. What's good for you isn't necessarily good for me, you know.
Yeah,
it's legislating morality, that we're getting back to the moral majority years.
It's kind of reminiscent of Sarah Palin and her kids. Same thing happened with all of them, right? She's so busy telling us how to live, she can't run her own damn family to the standards that she wants them to subscribe to. Come on, break here.
Well, I would like to talk a little bit about what transpired on Super Tuesday. One of the most alarming things it was an expected win by Trump, and it was an expected, I don't know if you caught his victory speech, full of lies. I no longer will listen to him do these speeches because he was riddled with fear-mongering and lies. I just listen to the fact-checkers afterward now because that's what I want to hear. I'd love to hear what the fact-checkers are saying because he went on a tangent that painted a picture of America that was horrific.
And
I'll tell you what was...
Go ahead. Well, isn't it curious
he's
not giving the rebuttal to Biden's State of the Union address tonight. Isn't that curious?
Yeah.
You'd think he'd be jumping all over that opportunity, but he isn't.
He'd be the one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'd be the one because he is the head of the party. Now, the other thing is, I'd like to say what came out of that incredible Super Tuesday, which didn't have any surprises. I guess Vermont surprised me a little bit, but whatever. Have you ever heard of this Mark Robinson, who won the GOP nomination for Republican governor in North Carolina, one of your states that you have a
Didn't hear about that until the election, but you realize that's gearing up to be the most pivotal and most expensive governor's race in the country this fall, when he and another elected official, who's the Democratic Attorney General, Josh Stein, are going to be facing off. Yeah.
And this guy, it's no surprise you don't know him. And here I was a little shocked. I said, they have a Democratic governor there. And then they have a Republican lieutenant governor, and that's who this guy is right now, Mark Robinson. He's lieutenant governor. Those are separate positions, so they're elected. In our state, it doesn't work that way, but that's how come they're so completely opposite. So my thing I wanted to say about this guy, he was a factory worker in 2018. That's all he was. And he started ranting on Facebook, and it went to a city council meeting in the wake of the Parkland shooting here in Florida, and all those 20 people were murdered, at the Parkland school. And he ranted, and he called the kids who were standing up for calling for common sense gun laws, he called them media prostitutes. for advocating common sense gun laws. And that's how this guy kind of got rose to fame. And now he's going to be, you know, running for the governor. And he once said, I'm going to give you a few of his comments. He's born of the MAGA movement, okay? And here's what he said. I got, and I'm using direct quotes from him, because they compile these quotes from interviews and from his own radio shows and from video clips on TV. He says, I got them AR-15s in case the government gets too big for its britches, because I'm going to fill the backside of them britches with some lead. The guy ought to learn some grammar first, but that's how he talked. He called Michelle Obama a man. He called Hillary Clinton a heifer. He is a Holocaust denier. He said that he supports banning abortion in all cases. But then somebody found out and busted him that he paid for an abortion in 1989. And he said, oh, yeah, I did do that. He goes, well, I don't agree with that now. He says, Christians are called to be leaders, but only men. Men should be the leaders of women. And how his direct word was, the Holocaust is hogwash. He says, gays are filth. Beyonce is satanic. The moon landing in 1969 might have been fake. And the civil rights movement, and by the way, this guy is black, the civil rights movement in the 60s was crap. MLK Jr. was a communist. And this is the guy Trump endorsed last weekend and called him MLK on steroids. And he's done more for the civil rights movement ever than anybody. This guy has done nothing in civil rights. I don't even know what Trump was talking about. I looked up this. So if anybody wants to see these quotes, you go to realmarkrobinson.com. And these are direct, and they tell you exactly when he said it. Because he's now blaming the media for fake news and making this up, when it's his voice, his video.
Yeah,
this is the guy that's going to be running.
In fact, he called for the abolition of women's voting rights. He wants to take us back 100 years or more, so that he thinks women shouldn't even be able to vote. And also opposed Medicaid expansion in his state. It's unbelievable.
They did just pass it. I wonder what it's like for the governor, who's very reasonable and who has to do, it's Roy Cooper, the Democratic governor there. He's on the second term, so that's why he has to step down. He has had to contend with the likes of this lieutenant governor, as well as, you know, a very red state in the rural areas, as you know. But somehow they managed to pass stuff that we can't do in Florida, like you said, like this Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. How were they able to do that? Well, it's because they had a governor who fought for the people there, and like what we got going on here.
So this guy's kind of the Herschel Walker of Alabama with Trump's full endorsement. That's great. I wonder how he'll come out. He'll probably get 46% of the vote.
I'm telling you right now.
What is going on in this country? Are you kidding me?
I immediately called all my friends. I called all my friends who live there about him, and they're horrified. They're kind of like how we felt when DeSantis decided to run for president, because we said, oh boy, the whole country's going to see him for what he is now. And that's what they said. They said, in a way, you know, this guy's got to come down in flames, because he's managed to offend everybody, you know, gay, black, Jews, you know, everybody.
That's called an equal opportunity offender. That's nice. At least he believes in equal opportunities for the people he offends. So that's a start.
And have Trump, you know, standing right by him and saying, oh, he's great, MLK on steroids. My friends all said, what? He hasn't done a single thing, you know, that is positive for this state. So anyway, it's unbelievable.
Well,
he's an outgrowth of the MAGA movement.
Sure. And guess what woke up in Florida, Michelle? Woke itself. That's right.
That was a shot.
Governor got shot down again this week when a federal appeals court ruled that the law that he'd pushed that would limit diversity and race-based discussions in private workplaces is unconstitutional. I know what this guy's a lawyer, and he doesn't know how to interpret the Constitution. Are you kidding me? He's that obsessed.
He's a woke lawyer. Yeah. Didn't he go to Harvard and Yale?
Exactly.
Yale? I know.
It's incredible.
You know what? Here's what I noticed in his presidential campaign. Do you realize he stopped talking about woke on the national stage? We didn't hear. He does it all the time in Florida because they just love him down here. But think about it. He was really kind of quiet. He tamped that down. Somebody said to him, "That ain't working." And it's not working now, as we just saw with the federal appeals court. They said, "You've gone too far." That's what he does.
He wasn't even in the race enough for us to tell the rest of the country about how oppressive he is, how he's trying to turn our whole education system here in Florida into nothing more than a conservative indoctrination Hillsdale College of the South, right?
Yeah.
His
big thing on Florida is free is not free. Isn't that his big thing? Tell everybody, hey, come on down to Florida. We're free here. And there's so much we are not free, including what you said, what's happening in our higher institutions and everything.
The control he and the legislature are taking of the communities in this state that won't let us do what we want, whether it's here in Clearwater or in Key West, or even a Hillsborough County tree ordinance. He says, if that interferes with builders making money, then I'm just going to squash it, and you can cut down any trees you want. He doesn't care what the people of Hillsborough County want. He's not advocating freedom. He's advocating oppression by heavy-handed government rule.
I'm still caught up on his firing Andrew Warren. I'm never going to get over that. I voted for the guy twice. And he came in and systematically took him out because he didn't like what he was doing, which was signing a petition that he would not enforce the abortion laws.
So he doesn't believe in freedom of speech either, does he?
He doesn't. No, not at all. And speaking of which, what about his state police force? What about that? The state guard that he got all millions of dollars to implement.
Well, that's interesting. I've been contemplating what that's all about, because the legislature provided for 1,500 members of this force, and I think they're struggling to get 200 on staff. They've had three different leaders, so they're having high turnover in the management of it. And I wonder what the actual intent of this was. And I'm convinced that what he had in mind was that he would be the candidate for the presidency. And wanted to have this force available to intimidate voters in high Democratic districts, especially among the minorities and black voters. He wanted them to know that if they've had any interaction with the police and they show up to vote, there's a very good likelihood they're going to end up being arrested and go to jail for whatever, whether they're going to be carded as they go in to the polls and see if there's outstanding warrants or even an outstanding traffic ticket or something, so that he would keep the minority voters and the Democratic voters home on election day and win Florida and ultimately the presidency. Well, now that he's not even in the game anymore and he can't run for a third term as governor, he probably is deciding that he really doesn't need this private police force anymore.
Well, I'll tell you where he's sending them. He's sending them to go cut down the razor wire. We're sending in Texas. You know how he loves to spend Florida money in Texas?
Yeah.
Remember when he sent all the Texas migrants to Martha Vineyard? Well, then now he's sending some of these people, as well as our state guards down there, to do something. Here's another thing. The Supreme Court ruled that the federal government had the right to take down the razor wire. Texas is totally ignoring the Supreme Court and continuing to put up the razor wire while federal officers are taking it down. Isn't that a great use of state and federal money right now? He has sent some of these people to the border to do this on our dime, to break something that the Supreme Court. Isn't it great when the Supreme Court does something they like, they herald it, like Roe versus Wade, but when they do something they don't like, Texas just thumbs its nose at it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, true. It's amazing.
And it may be curious to see what authority the Supreme Court has to carry out rulings that it hands down through this decade. If more and more of these rulings are unpopular, especially if they have to do with how Congress operates, because they can rule anything they want, but they don't have any enforcement power. Heck, they can't police themselves. We've seen that pretty effectively demonstrated, haven't we? It's unbelievable.
Exactly.
But what I don't understand, maybe you can help me with this. Conservatives have been complaining relentlessly for 3 years that Biden and Kamala Harris haven't gone down to the southern border, and now they complain when he went there. They were just mad at how he walked around or something. And what's the point of going there? I can tell you what's going on there. I see the pictures.
Yeah.
I can read the stats. I can get reports from ICE people. Yeah, you know, what's the urgency of actually going there?
And the whole thing about the border situation, we're not even going to talk. I hope he brings it up in the State of Union tonight that he was ready to sign off on this bipartisan border thing, the strongest package to come across in years, and Trump squashed it. I hope he brings that up, because if it's such an urgent problem.
He's
bound to. They claim every day people are dying because of this border, and every day, you know, where people are getting murdered. Well, yet then you're willing to let all these people to die of fentanyl and be murdered all the way up until next January when you take office, because you will not implement it.
Well, there's two sides of that story, but what I'm going to be watching for is all the heckling that potentially can go on. because we had it last year, right? With the address.
Well.
And I know that Johnson has kind of implored the conservatives to just stand down this year and act like adults and don't heckle him, but they're not going to pay any attention to him. They're going to do it. They're really doing it for self-promotion. They got away with it last year. The sergeant-at-arms didn't escort anybody out of the building, and I bet they'll do it this year. Heck, a couple of Supreme Court judges may start heckling him for all I know. Because
he can
jump ugly on them.
Who do you think will be the first one? Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boba?
I think Marjorie Taylor Greene. Yeah. He wants to. He wants a little camera time. I'm sure he'll be on. So yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. I'm sure there'll be a lot of bar bets on either, you know, who heckles first or how many times he stumbles or mispronounces something. But his fundamental message is going to be probably about how well the economy's doing, how many jobs have evolved from his administration, and the fact that today, on this day when we're sitting here talking, more Americans in history have gotten up and gone to a job, and yet we were supposed to see the economy tank, when we were supposed to see inflation expand when you got the Inflation Reduction Act passed, and it didn't happen. And we're seeing infrastructure being rebuilt because he knew how to deal with both sides of Congress, including Moscow Mitch, because of his experience, because his whole life has been in government, and he understands it, and he knows how to try to get it to function. Trump, on the other hand, you know, I don't get people get tired of hearing progressives bash him, but quite honestly, he doesn't give a damn about the government of this country or where it's going or the Constitution or how to deal with Congress. That's why he wants to be a dictator. He just wants to get in and say, here's what we're going to do, whether you like it or not. And government in this country, whether he likes it or not, just isn't structured to work that way. And that's why he's so unqualified.
He will put in the loyalists. Put in the loyalists and the patsies to agree with them. There are no guardrails on the second term. Guardrails.
You're absolutely
right.
You
won't have the... And they're losing guardrails in our Senate. You know, you've got Romney going. I mean, and some people in the House. They've all said they're stepping down because they cannot stand what is happening in Congress, that nobody wants to work as a unified force and do compromises anymore.
Kirsten
and
Sinema's
they're all going to be gone.
Yeah, Sinema and Moscow and Mitch. They're
Manchin.
All.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's going to be interesting.
It is. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Sure thing.
And when we get back, we're going to talk about one issue that conservatives and liberals agree on, even though they may not agree on the solution to it. Time for a quick break now for some important messages here on the Tan Talk Radio Network, after which the Voice of Reason will return with more of the issues the conservatives never want you to hear about.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, and insect control to grinding and removal, you get an experienced, ISA-certified, and veteran-owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
You're listening to the Voice of Reason on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This April 9th to the 14th, join us in Lakeland at Sun and Fun's biggest event ever. Discover a jam-packed lineup of special events all week long. Dazzling air shows and hundreds of exhibits are waiting for you. And don't miss a once-in-a-lifetime concert by Dylan Scott.
I need one she ain't climbed up in that ain't played her favorite songs.
With special guest Sarah Evans on opening night Tuesday, April 9th at 6 p.m. Witness the Thunderbirds soar through the afternoon sky as you explore more than 500 exhibitions. Watch mesmerizing fireworks shows on Wednesday and Saturday night and more. Get ready for an immersive experience for the whole family. And don't forget, you can bring kids under 10 for free. Whether you stay for a day or all week, take fun to new heights this April. Don't miss out on Sun and Fun 2024. Get tickets and a guaranteed parking pass at flysnf.org. That's flysnf.org.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
And if you care to reach out to us by email and comment on the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our address is WTANvoice@AOL.com. That's all one word, WTANvoice@AOL.com. Well, one of the biggest issues facing our country is what to do about our annual budget deficits that add to our national debt, which has now reached approximately $34 trillion. This is up from $17.8 trillion just 10 years ago. And 20 years ago, it was a mere $7.4 trillion. Well, according to the Congressional Budget Office, it could increase another $19 trillion in the next decade, which would bring it to in excess of $53 trillion. Well, it's simply unsustainable because of what it costs to service that debt. Our national elected officials think they have a piggy bank that can't be exhausted, but that's simply not the case. At today's 10-year rate of 4.2%, it means the interest expense will cost us about $2.2 trillion annually and continue growing. We'll be unable to afford it, and it'll likely cause a heck of a lot of financial pain. for America. Well, how are we going to solve this? There's a very simple answer. Reduce expenses and increase income. Because remember, the U.S. can't really default on its debt by filing for bankruptcy. All they can do is fail to pay these bills, and then, of course, we can't borrow any more money. The national debt's rapid growth demands a long-term approach, and we got to set ourselves on a path where we cut expenses after adjusting for inflation and increase tax revenue by a similar amount gradually over one or two decades. Now, it seems to me that the real only solution would be to return to the type of tax structure we had under the Eisenhower administration, which was a graduated tax structure that places higher rates on top-tier income. And remember, this is we're only talking about taxing income here, not wealth. So if we have people with assets in excess of $1 billion, the assets that they have aren't being taxed, only what income is generated by them, which is substantial. So they're still going to have all the wealth. They're just going to pay more taxes on what they generate. Now, I'll give you an example. The scuttlebutt is that Elon Musk is considering funding the Trump campaign since Trump's running out of money and is spending most of what he takes in on legal fees. Okay. All right. Well, think about the power that he has because of his bankroll. And that revolves around the current tax structure that's evolved ever since the Reagan administration into one that makes the rich get richer. And it ends up putting a relatively tiny minority of Americans in a position to run the whole government. Tax laws and regulations are structured to benefit them instead of the majority of us as they hoard more money and we have a transfer of wealth from working people to the uber rich. And the consequence is the debt that we run up to pay for that. Now, I'll invite you to think with me. Where did a lot of this debt come from? Last 4 years of Bill Clinton's administration, we had budget surpluses. And that, of course, was mostly because of the tech boom, not anything that Slick Willie did, but it's what he did not do that's so important. He didn't then decide that, gee, we've got excess money coming in, let's cut taxes. No, we took that extra revenue and used it to start paying down the debt, keeping it from growing. In came W. And what did he do? What did Baby Bush do? Something that no president had ever done. Take this country into war at the same time that he implemented a tax cut for the rich. That's insanity. What can result from that other than debt? And we rang up another $3 trillion of debt just over that. So then, of course, they turn around and when Obama gets in power and we have all the deficit spending, what do? They turn around and blame the Democrats and say, darn it, these Democrats are giving us all this debt. We've got to do something about it. Well, it wasn't their fault. Some Democrats have talked of a flat 15% tax on all corporate income over $1 billion a year, which means there's no loopholes to hide profits with, because it wouldn't be a tax on profits. It would be a tax on income. The logic being that if any company is making that kind of money, it should be able to contribute to the country and the infrastructure. So it has been implemented in some countries in Europe, and it would, I think, start us on the road to recovering from all the deficit spending that we're engaged in. Now, we had that higher tier tax structure under the Eisenhower administration. It provided enough revenue to build the whole interstate highway system. And now that it's gone because of Republican tax policy, what do we have? Almost $2 trillion a year in deficit spending. Wealthy people, I remember they used to threaten to leave the country because the taxes were so high. But in reality, they didn't because, again, it isn't their wealth that's being taxed, only their income. And the problem is that they're already getting such significant control of the country to keep those tax laws in place instead of repealing them, because what better source is there than a tax on the income of the uber rich? The middle class can't afford to pay it. A lot of us are living paycheck to paycheck. Adding tariffs on imports isn't going to do it. That's just adding a tax on consumers and making life harder for us. But these guys have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. And thanks to the Federalist Society, the courts and their unelected judges are supporting the ability of these wealthy uber-rich to influence the government, influence the senators and the congressional representatives through their lobbyists to keep these tax laws in place so they keep hoarding more and more money. And I think our best hope is that the Democrats can gain control of Congress and the White House so that these tax laws passed by the Republicans can be repealed and allowed to sunset. And then we can start on our way to dealing with the deficit. But when we talk about cutting the government, did you ever notice that the conservatives don't tell us specifically what they want to cut? Do they really want to cut Medicare? Do they really want to cut Social Security? Do they really want to cut funding for infrastructure? I hope not, because that's going to affect a heck of a lot of people in very serious ways. They also talk about regulations. Do you ever notice that? They say, we need to cut regulations so that businesses can thrive. Regulations are what the problem is. They're hurting business. Regulations cost jobs. Well, what they really do sometimes is save lives. I noticed an item that in the paper last Thursday, a fire started in a restaurant on the first floor of a place called the Green Cozy Cottage Shopping Mall in downtown Dhaka, Bangladesh. Dhaka's the capital. It's a six-story building that had no fire exits. The death toll climbed to at least 46. The prime minister, who is a woman named Sheikh Hasina, expressed her shock at the loss of lives and said it was a result of negligence. Here's what she said, quote, "We always request our architects, at least when they design homes or buildings, to keep a small open balcony, a fire exit, or ventilation. But architects will not design that properly, and also the owners do not want to leave an inch of space." Other violations were also reported. The Capital Development Authority, which is the official regulator for Bangladesh, said the building was not permitted to open restaurants, but it had at least 8 food shops, and the restaurant kitchen is where the fire started in the first place. So now we can see what happens when we don't have regulations or inspectors to ensure that they're being carried out properly. And if you think you can rely on businesses to comply with regulations voluntarily, then ask yourself why they didn't do that in India. I'm sorry, in Bangladesh. I think we tend to take the results of all the regulations we have in this country for granted. When we buy any kind of a food product, we know that because we have tamper-proof packaging regulations in place, nobody's messed with the food. And if you buy a house, presumably it was built according to code so that you're not going to get electrocuted in the kitchen because it wasn't built properly. And same thing, when you buy a car, you have reason to assume that it's properly built and has the safety features in it that can protect you because of Ralph Nader. Now look at what happened with the railroads. When we have a derailment on average once a day in this country. And why? Because the regulations keep cutting the number of crew they need on these trains, and these are very long trains that need more people to ensure that they're not catching on fire. But where are the regulators? Why don't the railroads put them on the train if they're so concerned about safety without needing government regulation? Because any way they can cut costs and increase profits, that's what they're going to do. And what is the result? All these derailments. So I want to hear these conservatives be more specific and tell us what regulations they want to cut. Because most of these regulations are probably those that are associated with environmental issues like emission standards or oil drilling practices. mining operations. Come on, we've seen the oil spills, whether they're drilling for oil or transporting it. All of these things happen because we get lax about the regulations or don't follow the regulations, and they don't cut jobs. They create jobs because you need people to ensure that they're being carried out or to carry them out, and they save lives. I also wanted to talk about the environment while we've got a few minutes left and what's going on with the world's environment. Many highly vulnerable populations and ecosystems are already facing the devastating impacts of climate change. It is increasingly clear that the rise in global temperature will exceed the 1.5 degree centigrade threshold that was defined in the 2015 Paris Agreement. Already we're at 1.15 degrees centigrade of heating above the 19th century baseline and will likely pass 1.5 degrees in the mid-2030s. So that's only a couple years from now, right? The window to forestall this event is closing because of barriers including lack of financing, institutional capacity, and such factors as poverty, consumption, and lack of societal trust. It's time we prepare to get closer to a 2 degree centigrade warmer world where it's going to be so hot in the summer you won't even want to go outside. It's already getting that way. And then, did you notice that new research has found that Arctic Ocean sea ice is shrinking even faster than previously thought, and that the Arctic may start to see its first ice-free days within the current decade? I remember when the climatologist predicted this years ago, I thought, well, I won't live to see that, and now you're going to be able to take a ship across the North Pole. The milestone could occur before the end of the decade or sometime in the 2030s, as many as 10 years earlier than previous projections, according to a study published just Tuesday in the journal Nature Reviews Earth and Environment. The study defines ice-free as when the Arctic Ocean has less than 386,000 square miles of ice, which, of course, is just floating around, and with that little amount of ice, ships can navigate through it. The study's lead author said it's no longer a remote possibility that might happen at some point. Unfortunately, it basically occurs under all the emission scenarios in our climate models, so it seems like it's going to happen, and so we need to be ready for that. By mid-century, 2035 to 2067, the Arctic could see consistent ice-free conditions in September, which is the month when sea ice concentrations are typically at their minimum, according to the study. This is, of course, something that is not going to affect sea level rise because all that ice is floating, but it certainly shows that we are warming the planet faster than we had predicted. In fact, I know back in the 70s, the climatologists predicted that the Earth was going into a cooling cycle. Well, it probably would have if the human species hadn't evolved to the point where it is today. But since we're introducing so much carbon, it just can't cool off, and we're gonna have to make adjustments to both our climate issues and the national debt within a decade. This is gonna be serious business. Well, finally, I want to address the issue of what basically circle back to where we started this continuous effort by the extreme right to turn our country into a what they call a Christian nation, and the consistent admonition that we were actually founded as a Christian nation and are supposed to be a Christian theocracy. And I saw a couple letters that really addressed it well in the paper recently. One of this says this: when the New World was being settled, groups of people were fleeing Europe for freedoms from religious zealots, insisting everyone become members of the king's church and religion, from oppressive religious beliefs and schisms, and for the right to worship as they desired. Our founding fathers were not intent on establishing a Christian nation. They wanted one where anyone could worship or not worship. The U.S. has become a nation of people from all parts of the earth, the melting pot of peoples. The intent was to form a nation of freedom and laws, not a nation for Christians only. Another guy says the trend with some people these days to assert that we're a Christian nation is that they want to dictate how we think, how we live, and what we can and cannot read. And those are the things that we see happening in Alabama and here in our own state of Florida with censorship of our books. What's that all about? And if we're really such a free nation, or sorry, for such a free state. He goes on to say the country is not a Christian nation, nor will it ever be officially. We have freedom of religion here, period. Well, that depends on how we vote and how we use our power at the ballot box, because there's a very serious effort to convert us into a Christian nation. And if we stand down, that's where we may find ourselves one fine day. Finally, on the issue of teaching communism in kindergartens, this is really a remarkable issue, because before Florida Republicans start trying to teach anyone about communism, they need to quit spewing lies about it. As long as they continue accusing Democrats of being communists, with the capital C, they clearly don't know what they're talking about. There are no communist, with a small c, countries, meaning countries that practice the economic system of communism. In a communist country, the workers would be in control, and they are not in any communist country. Communist, capital C, countries are ruled by dictators. It makes them a lot like fascists, and they really belong on the right end of the political spectrum, not the left. Unlike the Democratic Party, the Republican Party has a lot in common with the Chinese Communist Party. They both are authoritarian. They both suppress and punish legitimate opposition. They act in secret. They oppress minorities. They control public discourse and suppress free speech. They suppress freedom of religion and freedom of the press. They oppose due process. They invade private life. Republicans really should be careful who they call communists. Of course, the whole point of this law is so that they can teach our children that Democrats are communists when they are not. And I agree with this, because we're hearing this mantra repeated more and more often, that the Democrats are totally equated to communists, when in fact there's nothing to make that connection or draw that connection at all in the platforms of the Democratic Party. They're not the ones that ever oppress freedom of speech or freedom of the press. They've never called for Fox fake news or One American Nation to be shut down. They never make any efforts to control our reproductive rights or to put politicians in the physician's office with us making our health care decisions instead of the physicians. So I don't know where they're getting this stuff. It's just because I guess they haven't got anything else to present as an argument for why we should vote for the conservatives, who want to move this country backwards, as far as I can tell, and really are beginning to pose a legitimate, serious threat to our freedoms. We see this happening in states as we speak. We know they're going to continue to do this as much as they can, and it's more important than ever that we vote this year. Our quote today is from Edward Snowden, if you remember who he was. He said, "There can be no faith in government if our highest offices are excused from scrutiny. They should be setting the example of transparency." Tomorrow morning, join Paul Malloy for Freedom Works, and I hope you'll join me again next Thursday for another edition of The Voice of Reason. Meantime, I'm Ed Golly reminding you, if the statement seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it just because a conservative said it. Make them prove it.